Eat Drink Indiana Radio is made possible with support from Marigold Clothing, making fashion fun since 1989, in Broad Ripple, featuring women's clothing, gifts, and accessories, and committed to customer service. More on Facebook or at marigoldclothing.com. Eat Drink Indiana Radio is powered by eatdrinkindy.com. Eat local, drink local, eat drink indie. Welcome to Eat Drink Indiana Radio on WFYI HD2 The Point. I'm your host, Jolene Ketzenberger. This week on Eat Drink Indiana Radio, we are out in the garden talking tomatoes and kale and peas and sweet potatoes and all sorts of other plants. First, we head to Shelby County to talk with heirloom tomato grower James Kelly of Heritage Seeds of Hope. And then we are back in Indianapolis to talk with Audrey Barron of Ezra's Enlightened Cafe about the urban farm she and her husband are carving out on 6 overgrown acres near 65th Street and Allisonville Road. So stay with us for more here on Eat Drink Indiana Radio on WFYI and WFYI.org. Urban farm on 6 overgrown acres in the middle of Indianapolis isn't easy, but that's what cafe owner Audrey Barron was determined to do. The owner of Ezra's Enlightened Cafe in Broad Ripple wanted a farm to supply her vegan restaurant with organic fruits and vegetables, and so a farm is taking shape on the north side of Indianapolis on a piece of property that has sat vacant for 20 years.
We bought the property last year, and we cleared the space for the farm in February, and since then it's just been my husband and I and our farm manager, and it's just a few volunteers working to make it happen. And basically we have like one day a week because we both work full time, so we'll come out here and just, you know, work a good 8-9 hours in the dirt. And so what you see here is, you know, the culmination of that.
Now tell me how this is going to help you with Ezra's Enlightened Cafe.
Obviously, we want to use the food, you know, at the restaurant as much as possible. So we planted, I think we had over 800 starts.
That's a lot of plants.
That's a lot of plants, yeah. I might have went a little crazy with the tomatoes because I love tomatoes. So I chose 6 different varieties and everything's heirloom. So, yeah, we've got tomatoes, we've got peas, we've got edible flowers, you know, kale, all kinds of greens, cabbage, you name it. And we have plans for, you know, as the season goes on, you know, we're going to be harvesting the spring crops and then planting more summer crops. And then over here we have fruit trees, the small baby trees that you see here. So we have about 6 different varieties of fruit trees. We've got berry bushes and things like that going. So this is our first, we've never done this before.
So. Ever? So you know, farming, I mean, background?
Not really. I mean, I loved a garden, but as far as like a fuller scale, like really, you know, plan it out kind of thing, this is our first time. So we're just grateful to have plants in the ground, to be honest with you. We're grateful for that. And
well, it's been such a tough spring, you know?
It was an interesting spring, a lot of rain, and then, you know, the hot and then the cold. So, but that's Indiana.
Was it hard to wait?
To wait,
because people tend to want to get things in the ground at the first breath of warm air.
It was a little bit, but at the same time, I felt like we just have had our heads down and just working. Like there's so much work that mounts up. You know, you like have this picture of what you want, and then you're like, okay, it's going to literally take us. I mean, we had to clear a half acre of wooded land. That takes a lot of work. You know, when you're really in it, it's just like you're just clearing trees. And then, of course, because I love trees, I'm saying, I love you, tree. Each one that we're knocking down, I'm hugging it. And like I'm going through like emotional turmoil as we're cutting down the trees.
So you found this property that had been, you know, here for a long time, overgrown.
Yeah.
Could you see what you wanted?
Absolutely. I could visualize it. My husband and I, you know, would just sit down at night after we'd put Ezra to bed and just go over, okay, what do we want it to look like and feel like? And I mean, that's really what is what's happening now? And it's amazing to think about just a year ago, us purchasing the land and then what it is now. We have the neighbors that live around here. We've had some pop in as they see work being done, and literally people who have lived here for, 20 years, 30 years, had no idea what was here because it was so overgrown. Everyone just ignored it. They were like, we don't know what's back there. We don't care. And now they're like, wow, you know, they're excited to see what we're doing with it.
So there was a house back here and you've sort of reclaimed that. How was that?
Awesome. Awesome. That's my husband's domain. He owns a property management company and he loves to breathe new life into homes. And so this home was actually, there were a family of six. So a mom and a dad and four girls that they raised in a two bedroom house. The parents slept in the living room and the girls had the bedrooms. And they've all grown up to be, I think, like one's a PhD. They're all very, you know, highly educated and such a loving space. You know, the energy of this place, you can feel that they've put a lot of love into it. And I'll show you as we go up to the house, as we clear around the house, we see, you know, garden beds from way a long time ago that they've done with like stone and brick. And so we really are wanting to keep the integrity of that and kind of, you know, open it up again and kind of reimagine their vision that they had a long time ago.
Well, that's very nice. This must be a very uplifting place.
It's amazing. I mean, as you can hear, I mean, the birds are singing. We've seen deer. We've seen, you know, a crane. We saw a crane out here the other day, eagles and just the wildlife. It's really cool to be farming and surrounded by woods because it's peaceful. And then we have the stream is over here and we've got our bees over there. So it's like, you know, it just feels really good to be out here. It's peaceful at the same time. So it's easy to do a good 8 hours of work because you're just feeling so chill, you know.
But you are really pretty much right in the middle of the city, though. I mean, so you're not very far away, but it just feels like it.
Yeah, that's the awesome thing is it's going to be easy for people to get to. So our other vision for this is not only growing for us, but also to have public out here to, you know, to get experience with, you know, helping to harvest. You know, we see classes being taught here, bringing in other folks that have expertise in, you know, possibly foraging or, you know, fermenting foods or even classes for kids, just using the land for the community to come together.
Well, it certainly looks like you have a lot of potential for that, a lot of space. You know, you mentioned the creek right there, the bees. So this is really a big vision.
It is. It's something that honestly has been something I've wanted for a long time. It's actually just an extension of Ezra's. When I created Ezra's, I knew that I wanted something like this as well. It was always more of I'm a very holistic minded person. So like, thinking about how to support myself and my community and just kind of letting it ripple out, you know? So Ezra's vision is no matter what, we don't compromise on the quality of our food ever. And the way that that ripples out to the people who eat it in the community is amazing. And so we want to go even further with it and be like, okay, let's grow our food and let's show people not only how we grow, but like give them inspiration for them to do it for themselves at home. I'm all about independence. I want people to feel empowered to do things for themselves, to grow food for themselves, to be able to, that's why we teach the classes too, you know, to be able to be like, wow, I really love this. I love the way it makes me feel. I'm going to take a class so I can learn to make it for myself and my family. Cause I'm a big believer in, the healthier your community, and the healthier your community, the healthier you are too. Like we're all connected.
Well, and if you can make it seem not so overwhelming and doable, then I think people are more likely to give it a try.
Absolutely. Its simplicity is key, and it's so much more, it's pleasurable to me, you know, like when you think about sitting down to a recipe and you're like, oh my God, there's 20 steps. I'm going to be in the kitchen all day just to make this one batch of cookies. You know, I don't want people to feel like that. And so with our classes, we make it as easy as possible. But even in the kitchen, I feel like our recipes are pretty, probably, I don't know. It's my first kitchen experience. So I've never worked in a commercial kitchen before other than waitressing back in college days. So I don't have anything to compare it to, but I feel like our prep work is a little bit probably easier than others because we don't have ovens. You know, we're not waiting for things to cook. We make it, goes in the freezer, it's done, you know? And so it allows us to get more done, you know?
Well, you are certainly getting a lot done there and here. So tell me a little bit about the farm, what you have going.
Okay, so we've got, we love flowers at Ezra's for both just the visual pleasure and also eating. So we have planted here some edible flowers that we will be, you'll see them in the cafe, and then you'll probably see them on your food in the cafe too. We have some heirloom greens. The trellis you see there are some beautiful peas. I do not remember the actual name of them, but they are. Everything here is heirloom. We have a large variety of herbs, so cilantro, parsley. We're growing celery. The big broad leaves you see, that's cabbage. So they are kind of the, they're winning the race right now. They're doing really well. We've got a lot of kale, probably not nearly as much as, I mean, we use ungodly amounts of kale. So these are tomatoes. We have peppers, jalapenos, and then we're going to be planting more, probably more tomatoes. We've got eggplant. And then we use a lot of sweet potatoes. If you've ever tried the sweet potato bowl at Ezra's, it's always organic, and we try to get local as much as possible. So we're going to try to grow our own too and see how that goes. And then we're actually going to try some corn, which I'm really excited about. We got this beautiful heirloom, I think it's called jeweled corn, that's got like, you know, like the purples and the blues and the reds. So it's not enough space for a huge crop, but we're going to kind of intermittently plant them and see.
Well, things are looking beautiful, and you have the fruit trees too, so you're going to have like a little orchard.
Yeah, absolutely. We have, like I said, like about six different varieties. And right here where you see these trees, those are also will come down soon, and we will be building an outdoor kitchen here. And we'll be having farm dinners outside. So I hope for that to be done this year. We'll see. You know, again, it's a big vision, but eventually it'll be there. And so we can actually just literally take the food, make it right there, you know, something simple, and have people enjoy an outdoor dinner.
We're talking with Audrey Barron of Ezra's Enlightened Cafe in Broad Ripple. Stay with us for more from Audrey here on Eat Drink Indiana Radio on WFYI and WFYI.org. This is Jolene Ketzenberger, and we are back here on Eat Drink Indiana Radio talking with Audrey Barron of Ezra's Enlightened Cafe in Broad Ripple. Audrey fills us in on how the idea for a vegan restaurant came about and how she turned a little garage into a popular cafe.
I had wanted a cafe for a long time. I've always loved hosting parties and just serving people, right? And as I got more and more into the healthy food scene and I became a chef, I taught classes for 6 years and not really sure what I was going to do. But in the back of my mind, you know, I would, like I mentioned to you, going to Italy and seeing the cafes in the back of my mind, it was just like this, that's what I would get excited about. And as I taught classes, the number one thing that people would ask me in every class, hundreds of classes I taught, when are you opening a restaurant? And where's your favorite place to eat? And it really told me, you know, there is a hole in the market. These people are, you know, no pun intended, they're hungry for it, right? They're like, okay, so we get it. We love the food. But where do we go, you know, just to enjoy this food? And then I started thinking about getting, you know, becoming a mother, and then I got pregnant. And with that energy of bringing new life in, I was really feeling this pressure, as odd as it may sound, like, wouldn't this be the time that you would just, you know, take a break, you know,
or have a baby. You don't really think about, yeah, I'll open a business too.
Yeah. That's, you know, who knows, but that's me, I guess. But I was really wanting a place where I could take my child and have no fear of what they're consuming. And then it got broader than that. People, just parents taking their kids, and where do they go if they're celiac? Where do they go if they, you know? So it started to become this thing I was working towards. And then a few months after I had Ezra, you know, we bought the domain name, the website, we secured a loan, and we started moving in that direction. And then, you know, we opened in 2014, and here we are. And
well, tell me about the little space where Ezra's Enlightened Cafe actually is.
Well, I am also a massage therapist, and I have worked at the Playful Soul, which we are, you know, we share that building, for years, and it had always been a, you know, just a garage where we stored some random things, you know, just an old garage. And it was a joke between some of us. Oh God, I just want to open a little cafe. There's no space in Broad Ripple. Oh my gosh, what if we just turn that little garage into something cute, you know? And then it started to really become like, wait, let me look into this. Let me just diagram it and see what it would act. Could we fit people in there? Could we do it?
Now, how big is it?
It's without the extra storage space next door. It's a little over 400 square feet.
Oh my gosh, 400 square feet, right?
Yeah. Yeah. So I think we're in that respect, we're pretty unique. The guys that deliver our towels say that we are the smallest kitchen they've ever delivered to, for sure. So we get that reassurance over and over again. You are the smallest kitchen, you know. What happens though in the small kitchen is that the need to be efficient. We are very close as a team, as you can imagine. It's a good thing that like our number one rule, as you know, to be a team member at Ezra's is kindness and respect always, to each other, to ourselves, and to our customers. It works out well when you are in a 400 square foot space.
So now, how did you turn what was a garage into a cafe?
It really honestly started with a drawing on a napkin. I don't remember if it was a napkin, but you know, something like that. A drawing and a ruler, and just figuring out, okay, can we physically do this? You know? And like I told you, I've never worked in a commercial space. I've never been a prep person. I've never worked on the line. My only commercial kitchen experience is waitressing at a Texas Roadhouse in college.
Oh my gosh. So, but you must have sort of envisioned what you wanted it to be.
Yeah, I envisioned it. And just honestly, from personal chefing and from teaching, I knew I'd done that for so long. I understood like the space you need to create something and how much space a food processor would take and all those things. So yeah, I took a lot of time to envision it and just spatially figure it out. And it was a fly by the seat of my pants thing. So I joke, like as it started to be built out, and I walked in and they had put the wall up for the kitchen and I was standing in the kitchen and some of the girls that started with me, which a couple of them still are with me, were standing in there and I had a freak out moment. I was like, this is too small. This is too small. We have to move this wall. There's no place for us to go. We're not going to do it. We can't do this, you know? And Sam was like, but if you move the wall, you're not going to have space for your customers. I was like, I don't care. I don't care. They can just walk in and leave because we're not going to be able to do this. And I was freaking out. We didn't move the wall. I was like, okay, you know, I got over that moment and we built it out and we figured it out. We figured it out.
Yeah. Now, because it is vegan and mostly raw, all raw, you don't have the concerns about ventilation hoods maybe and that sort of thing.
Yeah. It was a cheaper build out for that. And then obviously that there's, you know, the space that takes up isn't there. So we just have a lot of dehydrators. You know, we started with, I think, 3, and now we have, I don't know, 6 or 7. And it's really just a lot of shelving space. We did start out as a completely raw food cafe. We quickly learned that being in Indiana, you know, wintertime coming, people want hot food. I want hot food, you know, so it's like, well, let's do that for them. So now we have a hot bar that we call it, which is a bustling area of the kitchen where we're steaming things and cooking things and making soups every day. So it's a nice balance of cooked and raw.
We've been talking with Audrey Barron of Ezra's Enlightened Cafe in Broad Ripple. We'll be back with more from Audrey here on Eat Drink Indiana Radio on WFYI and WFYI.org. We're talking with Audrey Barron of Ezra's Enlightened Cafe, a little vegan restaurant that opened just about 2 years ago in Broad Ripple. But what's on the menu at a cafe that serves mostly raw vegan food? Audrey fills us in on the surprisingly large menu that's available at her little vegan cafe.
Gosh, it's so vast. We started with such a small menu and it's grown, but we have obviously salads. I mean, as you can imagine, but our salads, I feel like, are more than just a typical salad. Our Buddha bowl for a lot of people is 2 meals. Very filling salads. We do burger wraps. So we make, like, for instance, like a quinoa bean burger. We wrap it with lots of veggies and avocado. We wrap it in a collard leaf and you can pick that up and take it with you to go. We do hummuses. We do, cashew cheeses and things like that. And then we do something called the Nacho Mama's Bean Bowl, which is on a bed of some greens. And we've got, you know, our slow cooked pinto beans, a cashew nacho cheese, avocado, and we do Oh, gosh. Another thing that's unique about us is our entree changes about 3 times a week. So we'll have an entree for 2 days, and then it'll switch. So, we've done burritos, we've done enchiladas, we've done pizzas, taco salads, tacos. We do a lot of different, we do crepes. We've got a mung bean bowl. Things that really, when we're creating a dish, we think about a few things, but the two top ones are flavor and balance, so nutritional balance. How are they going to feel after they eat this dish? So what we hear a lot from people who are connoisseurs of this type of cuisine, wherever they travel, they go to the raw food restaurant or vegan restaurant, is that our food is really well balanced and they don't feel really bogged down by a lot of nuts and sauces. Because a lot of times what people will do, they're like, oh, it's vegan, so therefore we have to compensate and make it really fatty and saucy. And, and it's just like, well, whether you have meat or not, you don't want to bog yourself down with a lot of a lot of food and a lot of food that is really fatty and just, it's bad on the heart to take in a lot of that stuff. So we balance it with, a lot of vegetables, a good amount of protein, and then we do a lot of flavorful sauces, but not too much. And it's a good amount where you leave satisfied, but you can also go for a walk on the Monon. You can go back to work and you can
you're not going to fall asleep at 3 in the afternoon.
Right. So it's food for, we call it, our tagline is enlighten your plate. So it enlightens by eating this way, it literally enlightens the rest of your life. Because when you take in food that really supports you as a human being and everything, whatever it is you want to do for that day, you have the fuel to do it, So that's our goal, is to do that and to leave feeling better than when you walked in.
And you do drinks too, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we do smoothies, we do juices. Everything is fresh, everything's organic. And then another thing that's unique to us is we do something called herbal tonics. So I have formulated hot kind of latte drinks that are similar to something you might get at Starbucks, but there's no coffee. Instead of that, we use a lot of different herbal powders, almond milk that we make fresh, and it's blended and it's creamy and delicious. You just have to try it. But the really cool thing is that the effects of it are pretty immediate. I like to tell the story of our vanilla sweet dream. That one is if you need just some calming and relaxing, that one's really good. We had a woman come in that has, she just was feeling anxious. And she said, I just need something to help calm me down. So I recommended that to her. 10 minutes later, I see her sitting, sitting down at the table, and she just is kind of staring off into space. And she called me up and she goes, something's wrong. And I was like, oh, what's going on? And she was like, I just feel really, really peaceful. And I don't know why, it's not going away. she was concerned. I think that was maybe part of her anxiety, but I was like, this is called just being calm. It's just, it's a good thing. It's a good thing. So she came in the next day and got it again. And she came in repeatedly. And it's so anyway, people will see the effects pretty quickly because we use a good amount of the herbs. They're safe. They're balancing. There's nothing that's all the herbs that we use are safe for everybody. So there's not contraindications or anything. But I'm really into that, really into the deeper healing of the herbs. So I'd like to see that part of our business grow, actually.
Now, tell me just a little bit about how the farm, the gardens that you're putting in that we've talked about earlier, how that's going to sort of feed the restaurant.
Absolutely. So, we're ready with our harvesting baskets. And just whenever I'm told that I can harvest those vegetables, we will be out there. And literally we will just be, taking the kale and using it, and basically just incorporating it into, the menu that we already have. So a lot of the things we're growing, there's already a need for those things, but we are growing a few things that are a little unique, like I said, the corn, some of that. We're growing a lot of eggplant, which sometimes we use to make eggplant bacon, but we don't use it that much. So we're going to come up with some new and inventive eggplant dishes. And one of the things I love about local food is the creativity that it inspires in the kitchen. So you should see my staff when we get something in from Josh at Annabelle's Garden, and I'm like, all right, guys, let's open the bag. Let's see what we got. And they're like, ooh, what can we do? So I'm just looking forward to seeing that on an even a higher level. And then if and when, you know, if we get the outdoor kitchen this year or it's next year, but once we get that, you know, having my team out here and us really experiencing literally steps from where we harvest it to where we, you know, to where we prepare it.
We've been talking today with Audrey Barron of Ezra's Enlightened Cafe in Broad Ripple. For more information, go to ezrasenlightenedcafe.com. Before Geneva, Indiana resident James Kelly started growing heirloom tomatoes, he was a fan of beefsteaks, the hybrid his father had grown, the tomato he just knew was the best. It wasn't until he couldn't find the popular tomato one spring 27 years ago that he discovered the appeal of heirloom tomato varieties. A visit to the home of Shelby County seed saver Mary Ann Fox convinced him to give an unusual tomato a try.
So it was getting a little later in the season, about the time it is now in May, toward the end of May, and I couldn't find any beefsteak tomatoes at the local suppliers. And I really wanted beefsteak. It's what I'd grown since I was in sixth grade. It's what my father forced me to grow.
Of course,
right? That's all I really knew, and they were the best. My dad knows the best. So I was dead set on getting beefsteak, and my wife was kind of like, there are others, and it's like, beefsteak's what we need. So I was told Mary Ann Fox in Blue Ridge, Shelby County, she would, if anybody had them, she'd have them. So I get to her property. She's sitting in a chair processing out tomatoes or beans or doing something, you know, sitting at a little table. And she didn't acknowledge that I was there, didn't say hi, didn't do anything.
Just, oh, my goodness. And you went on up?
Yeah. So I was like, hello. And she just looked at me. And there's about 2,000 or 3,000 tomatoes in trays all sitting on the ground. All labeled. The labels had, so if it was a tangerine tomato or a yellow or a red and white striped or whatever the color or variation was, she had styrofoam cups and she had that color on the rim. So if it was a green and red striped tomato, it would be green and red stripes on the rim. It had the weight of the tomato, days to maturity, and she had 2,000 or 3,000 of them, tray after tray. There's 12 in a tray. It went on for, so I looked through and I'm looking at things I've never seen. I do not drink wine. I've never been interested in it, but I can imagine going to a winery that's got the best supply of wine and all the different variations. And those labels would mean nothing to me. I don't know the flavor, don't know even how to pronounce them. So I'm looking at all these weird names, and it's like beefsteak. I'm looking for beefsteak. There were a few that I recognized the name, but I'd never had them.
But you knew clearly you were in the right place to find tomatoes.
Yeah, so I thought, maybe I'm missing them, and you know, I don't want to go through 3,000 variations of tomatoes trying to find out these beefsteaks, so I asked Mary Ann, which I did not know her name. I wasn't even sure if that was her, and wasn't even sure if the woman could talk. So I said, I'm looking for beefsteak. And she goes, don't have them. And I thought, okay. I said, well, sell out, or, you know, can I get some? Or she said, no, I don't grow them. And I said, well, why don't you grow them? And she said that she doesn't grow them because they don't taste good. They don't have enough flavor. And I thought,
what'd you think?
I don't like this woman. What do you know about tomatoes if you don't like beefsteak? Those are the best. I know they're the best. I've grown them all my life. All, you know, up till the time I was, 32 years old. And that was the tomato. And so I mental note to myself, I do not like this lady. I will see you never again. And I turned to leave, and she gets up, walks over. She said, hold on. She walks over and grabs four tomatoes four plants and hands them to me. And on the tag, it said black from Tula. And she said, I'll see you next year. And I tried to pay her, and she said, don't worry about it. They're on me. I'll see you next year. And I thought to myself, no, you'll never see me again. You're rude.
And you don't have beefsteak.
Yeah, and you don't have beefsteak. And what do you know? So I planted the tomatoes. Never did plant beefsteak that year. I couldn't find them. Pretty common tomato, too. So, and that's how things are in life sometimes. So I planted the black from Tula that fall, that late summer, when I started getting the black tulas ripened. I was just taken back. It was just unbelievable, the flavor. The number of tomatoes, it was pretty good production. The size was nice. Skins were pretty good. But the flavor was just a knockout. And I knew then that I really don't know much about tomatoes. I saw 2,000 or 3,000 varieties, or 2,000 or 3,000 plants, probably 200 or 300 varieties. I didn't know any of those names.
Wow, but so there was a whole tomato world out there,
yeah,
beyond the hybrids that,
yeah,
we see.
It's like walking in that winery and seeing all that wine, and all of a sudden you can read the labels and you know the flavors and you know where they, you know, the nuances. And I wanted to learn that. I wanted to find out. I'm kind of a research nut, and I hate to, when people say, oh, do this. And it's like, you don't really know what you're doing. You just heard that somewhere. So I made it a point that I'm going to start growing out tomatoes and experimenting, and that's part of life.
Now, yeah. When was that? How long have you been at it now?
27 years now.
We've been talking with heirloom tomato expert James Kelly of Heritage Seeds of Hope in Geneva, Indiana. We'll be back with more on growing heirloom tomatoes here on Eat Drink Indiana Radio on WFYI and WFYI.org. We are back here on Eat Drink Indiana Radio today, talking tomatoes with seed saver and heirloom tomato expert James Kelly of Geneva, Indiana. James tells us how he got started saving seeds, how an inherited seed collection sent him on a mission to the Seed Savers Exchange in Decorah, Iowa, and how he started a seed bank of his own.
So when I realized that I didn't know much about tomatoes, because all I knew were the beefsteak and Early Girl and Big Boy, and Mary Ann Fox didn't grow any of those. And she told me that she didn't grow them because they had no flavor. So I really was taken back, thinking this woman didn't know anything. She'd given me four of the black Tula Russian tomatoes. I grew them out, and they were the best tomatoes I'd ever had.
Oh, my goodness.
Just a completely remarkable flavor. It's something, if you've never had one, It is like a good Georgia peach. It's the difference between an apple and a peach. There's so much flavor. So I made it kind of a mission to start growing other tomatoes. Fast forward 25 years, Mary Ann died. Her sister was overwhelmed with all the stuff. Mary Ann was a hoarder. So her sister, Susie, was overwhelmed with all the debris she had to take care of, and seeds, so many seeds.
So she had been a seed saver.
Yeah, major seed saver. So Susie called me and said, you know, would you be interested in her seeds? I said, yes. So thinking it was, you know, enough to fill a 55-gallon trash can, it's enough to fill a very large room to the ceiling.
Of seeds?
Of seeds. Bean seeds and tomato seeds, basically. So Mary Ann grew, over her life, probably 3,000 varieties of tomatoes. Each year she'd grow between 500 and 2,000.
And that was, whereabouts was that?
In Blue Ridge, mm-hmm. Shelby County. And so I thought she was really into tomatoes. And, you know, she has more tomatoes and more varieties than anybody I had ever seen. And that was not the case. She did that to get you to the property because she liked growing beans.
And so she saved all the bean seeds.
Yeah. Yeah. So when I inherited her bean collection or her seed collection, I was interested basically in the tomatoes and beans. My property is too shady and too many trees and shrubs for me to have beans. So, and I'm not that into beans yet.
But all those tomatoes, right?
Yeah. So I tried giving away the beans. I tried selling the beans. I tried everything. I'd give trash bag fulls of beans to people. It's like, take what you want. Just, you know, let me, you know, have a few back so they can grow them out and I can get the seeds back. So that wasn't working because my reach was pretty limited. So I contacted Seed Savers Exchange, mm-hmm. which is...
in Iowa?
Yeah, in Decorah, Iowa. And they're the largest non-governmental ran or funded seed savers, seed collection in the United States. I think also in the world. And told them of the issue I was having, and I had all these bean seeds. Would they be interested? So I was told that they weren't. So... felt really lost about that. And a couple weeks later, I get a call from a gentleman from the Seed Savers. And he said that they want to take the collection and wanted to know how big it was. And I said, well, if you pay gas, I'll deliver them. So I take them out to Decorah, Iowa. I have a 12-passenger panel van. And took everything out and just jammed as many seeds. They were in 16-ounce Pepsi bottles. Most of them were full. Put them all in my van, drove to Decorah, Iowa. What they did was examined all the seeds, counted them, put them in packets, labeled them, and then gave them away at their international conference.
Well, now that's cool. So that's a nice result of her saving.
You couldn't have a better outcome because now those seeds are all over the world. They're in New Zealand, China, Australia.
Well, that's a very nice end to the story, isn't it?
Yeah, my reach would have been maybe central Indiana,
right.
Indianapolis, Shelbyville, maybe a few other cities. So that was pretty cool. There's a story you can look on Modern Farmer magazine, Hill of Beans, and it talks about what I just described.
After delivering all those bean seeds to Seed Savers Exchange, James Kelly and a friend created a seed bank in an actual bank vault in a former bank building in Hope, Indiana.
Now I run the bank seed bank out of my house, meet with the people from time to time and trade seeds and plants. This year, my wife has planted 1,152 plants. There's 59 varieties. 19 of those varieties have the word black in their title. Most of my selections have been growing out several years. My still all-time favorite is Black from Tula.
The tomato that you tried all those years ago?
Yes. Still trying to find one that tops that, and I can't. And then black seems to be a predominantly good tomato. So Black Creme, Black Prince, Black Russian, Black Southern Night, Black Trifle. Different shapes, different sizes, different textures, but they all have this kind of robust flavor. And almost all of my tomatoes are meant to be eaten just by themselves, maybe with cottage cheese, a little salt and pepper, but they're not to be put on sandwiches or lost in some salad. It's
to enjoy the flavor of the tomato itself.
Yeah, the nuances. Mm-hmm. Be like pouring wine on ice cream, or, you know, you just don't do that. One thing I have that's somewhat unique in my collection is spoon tomatoes.
Now, what is that? I don't know.
So
that.
Spoon tomatoes are the size of peas, small peas. And that is the original tomato from Peru, South America, grown in the Andes. And it grows, it is truly a vine. I had a, first year I grew it, I had a vine that was around 18 foot long. And when I started counting the tomatoes, I gave up at 500.
Oh my goodness, on one vine? Oh my goodness, how wonderful is that?
Well, great if you have a kid to pick them, because it takes some time. I put down a rubber mat and just lay on the ground. It's such a big vine, you don't even try to stake it. It's weedy, ugly, looks half dead, and then it just, in September, it just comes on with the tomatoes.
Oh, that's incredible. How do they taste?
One of the most flavorful per gram. It has more flavor than all other tomatoes. It has that, if you're from Indiana and you like that beefsteak flavor, this is a knockout. It 10 minutes after you've eaten one little pea-sized tomato, you still have it in your mouth. That same flavor has the same number of seeds as a large tomato, just smaller. And it's believed that that tomato being the first in the world, all other tomatoes have that progeny in it.
Oh, how very cool.
So we have taken it, seed savers and whoever, growers, have taken it and developed all the different variations of tomatoes that you see today. And if you're not into, if you've only had beefsteak and you've only had early girl and big boy, and those type, you really are missing a lot. It's the difference between Boone's Farm and some Marlowe. It is unbelievable.
We've been talking tomatoes and beans, too, with heirloom tomato grower James Kelly of Heritage Seeds of Hope in Geneva, Indiana. Stay with us for more from James, including how many tomatoes he actually grows and some of his favorite varieties, here on Eat Drink Indiana Radio on WFYI and WFYI.org. When heirloom tomato grower James Kelly of Geneva, Indiana grows tomatoes, he's looking for one main thing, flavor. James tells us about some of his favorite tomatoes and fills us in on Heritage Seeds of Hope and how you can find out more about his heirloom varieties.
Currently, I grow 200 to 250 plants in a lot of shade. Some of my tomatoes don't receive sunlight until afternoon.
Wow, now that's...
contrary to
yeah,
what
Yeah, that
anybody,
is. That's very unusual. I've struggled with growing tomatoes with a shady yard.
So as a seed saver, when I go down and look at my garden patch and I see tomatoes that are doing quite well, so as a seed saver, it's if you can imagine going to your family reunion and there's 100 people there and you get to select the best of that 100, your aunt that's just so cool and, you know, the one you like the most, and your brother or sister that you like the most, and you pick those, and those are the only ones that are going to be allowed to have more children. That's what seed saving is.
So that's what you're doing. You're selecting the best, right?
Yeah. So I select for flavor. That's my main purpose. I'm not worried about skin toughness, disease, obviously, which in late August, early September, by then you know what diseases you're dealing with. If the plant's healthy, it's healthy, typically. So I don't go for size. I don't go for the earliest ones. I go for a good producing plant, but even at that, the most flavor. Since I'm in a lot of shade, they kind of get used to it. It's. I would liken it to, I always put things in human terms, because it's, you know, as human animals, it's easier to understand if you don't grow tomatoes or plants. So it's like somebody from Siberia or somebody from Sahara Desert, they're used to the heat. They're used to the cold. We would not, as Midwesterners, be able to handle it. So my tomatoes that are grown in the shade tend to be more shade tolerant.
That's very nice. I think that would be a very sought-after tomato.
Well, it could be, and I haven't been able to test this out because I don't have enough sun to grow my shade tomatoes in sun. I acquired a piece of property a few years ago in the main part of our small little hamlet, and next week I'll have some really giant trees cut down, and then the property will be full sun. And then we're going to turn that into a vegetable garden and flower garden. And that will be for the Heritage Seeds of Hope nonprofit seed bank. And the idea was we'll teach people, kids, older people, we'll learn from others how to grow a whole variety of things. At that point, I can test my theory on my seeds being shade tolerant. And they may be also sun tolerant. They might even thrive better because there's all these little nuances when you collect seeds that so I'm growing for flavor, so I don't notice certain things. One of my friends that's a grower, he likes early vegetables.
The earliest tomato that you can get, right?
So he's after that, and he's after size. And his are good tomatoes. They taste good, but mine are better tasting. And he would say, mine are the first ones up. But sometimes in the mix-up of things, it's like there's a characteristic you did not realize. Like the production of the plant is so great. Or there's a variation of something that just happened. And it's unique. And sometimes those uniquenesses can be a new tomato. That's how they
That's
happen.
Right. That's how it happens. Right.
Yeah. So I've had blue tomatoes, black tomatoes, orange tomatoes, yellow tomatoes. I currently have some that are they're considered a transparent tomato. They're not truly transparent. I have a friend that's growing them out in California, and he has a big farm and sells a lot of tomatoes, seeds, ships plants worldwide. So he is trying to take those transparent tomatoes, which when I say that, if you hold a yellow tomato, or in this case, a transparent, up to the sun, you can see the gel packs where the seeds are held. And you can see the meat of the tomato, kind of like an x-ray of your skeletal bones. So, that being said, he's trying to take it and make it so you don't have to hold it up to the sunlight.
So you can just see it?
You can look through the skin and see that there's stuff in there. And these tomatoes that I have that are transparent aren't the best flavor. They don't have a lot of flavor. I believe, and I don't know this to be true, the lighter the tomato, the less flavor. And that is a general rule.
Yeah, usually the color kind of goes along with flavor.
The deeper the colors, and that's I associate that with the black. But there are anomalies to all those. So I asked him, I said, well, why would you grow them if they're not going to have much flavor? And he said, because people will look through a catalog and they'll see a transparent tomato, they'll see the picture, and they'll think, I have to have it. And while they're ordering that, they order other things.
Well, that's a good strategy.
Yeah. So I have the spoon tomatoes, the smallest in the world, and I also have some blue varieties, which are like the color of brand new blue jeans. And story on that was I originally started growing those. I grew about 30 plants several years back with the idea that I would have blue tomatoes in the fall. I would make salsa. It would be blue salsa. And I could get Jim Irsay to be interested in my tomatoes.
Your Colts tomatoes.
Yeah, Colts salsa. Blue salsa. With the idea, I'm involved with a group for the Rivoli Theater. I'm trying to get people like Jim Irsay interested in our project because he has money, and we need money to get the project moving along. So the strategy was working great. You know, the plants were growing, a lot of fruit, really dark blue. time for harvest. I cut my first one open, and it is just green as hell inside. Not the least bit blue, and the blue on the skin doesn't show enough to make it even remarkable in a salsa. So it's like, and they don't really taste that much. They're not that much flavor to it. So it's like, well, that didn't really work. So I'm still looking for a way to approach Jim Irsay for my Rivoli project.
Well, I love that. So now, how can people find out about your tomatoes? How can they find out more information or buy some of your tomatoes?
Well, I'm on Facebook, and you can contact me, James Kelly, 8910 at gmail.com. I live in Southeast Shelby County, Geneva, and I'm on Facebook, James Kelly, and those would be the best ways. If you're a seed saver, we can make special deals. My plants usually go for $3 a pot. I'm all organic. My plants aren't huge, so if you're expecting something like they have at Rural King or Kmart or Walmart or wherever, it's that's not what I have. But I do have some of the best tasting varieties. And if you're into unique tomatoes, not beefsteak, I don't grow those. They don't have enough flavor.
Just like she said all those years ago, right?
Yeah. And it's kind of funny because my wife said, you don't grow beefsteak anymore. It's like, I hadn't really thought about that. I had not realized that intentionally not. There's not enough room in my garden.
We've been talking with James Kelly of Heritage Seeds of Hope in Geneva, Indiana. For more information on his heirloom tomatoes, look for Heritage Seeds of Hope on Facebook. This is Jolene Ketzenberger, and you've been listening to Eat Drink Indiana Radio on WFYI HD2 The Point. Thanks so much for tuning in to our urban farm and tomato-focused show this week. And thanks also to our guests, heirloom tomato grower James Kelly of Heritage Seeds of Hope in Geneva, Indiana, and Audrey Barron of Ezra's Enlightened Cafe in Indianapolis. And thanks also to producer John Ketzenberger for helping to bring you Eat Drink Indiana Radio.